League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, we did another feed swap episode, this time with my buddies Scott Pianowski and Michael Salfino from The Athletic and Yahoo Fantasy Football, respectively. This is a feed swap of their fantasy football show, The Breakfast Table, where we talked about a 12-team PPR league best ball draft that we did with some of their subscribers. So we just kind of went through the draft and talked about some of the interesting decision points that everyone has to go through in, you know, the first 10 rounds or so of their draft. So enjoying the feed swaps up, of course, go subscribe to Scott and Michael's show. Thank you for listening to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, and let's get into it.
Welcome to the Breakfast Table Fantasy Football Podcast. Very excited about today's show. We have a special guest. First, let me introduce myself. I'm Michael Salfino. I write fantasy for The Athletic. I also write the back of your baseball cards. And on Twitter, you could find me at Michael Salfino. Our special guest today is the person who drafted with us in our recent $7 members only best ball draft. It's actually a league that's going to be live and run, draft only, of course. And that is Davis Matic, who was my partner once in a high-stakes fantasy league that we almost won, but didn't. I think Scott might have won it that year.
Or Andy Barron's, actually. Sanders. Never forget.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, we had like a 99% win probability, you know, going into the Monday night game and lost. So, what is your... Are you going by the Russell Wilson moniker? I even forgot what it was. That's how bad it was. What is it, Mr.
Unlimited.
Mr. Unlimited.
I'm not, but...
That would be a really good nickname for you.
Any chance to remember that is great.
Okay, so Davis, why don't you just tell people where they could find you and listen to your podcasts and the name of your podcast and all that great stuff.
Yeah, all of my fantasy football content is free on sportsgrid.com. All my articles, all my rankings, all my projections, free on there. I do the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, which is a fantasy football podcast. And then I do the Takecast, which is more of a lifestyle, culture, you know, kind of a discussion podcast.
And it's super, you know, it's very successful. So congratulations on that. And of course, we're joined as always by my partner here on the podcast, Scott Pianowski.
Yeah, Scott Pianowski, Scott_Pianowski, catch me on Yahoo. And I just want to echo how much of a fan of Davis's work I am. I mean, not only is he just a great fantasy analyst, and I think he is excellent at telling you, there's a lot of people in our industry who are regurgitating the same stuff. And I think you get unique takes from Davis, and it's not always that easy to find those, although there are a lot of people doing great work. And the people that he gets on the Takecast, it isn't just a really good conversation, but he's able to book very interesting guests from all different walks of life. A lot of it's sports related, but not everything. So if you haven't checked out those programs, I think you'll really enjoy them.
So
appreciate it, fellas.
So here's where I want to start today. Something a little bit more conceptual, and you could tie it to anything you may have done during this draft that we had together. And it's based on something that I just heard somebody talking about on the radio. And I have a strong feeling about this, but I don't know where Davis is going to land on this. And that is, you have your own rankings. So say you have a player whose ADP is 70, but you think he's the 40th best player, just say like hypothetically, right? And now it's your pick and the other 39 guys are off the board, but like your 42nd, 43rd, 44th guy are there. Do you take the guy that's next on your board, or do you try to finesse it so that you take a player that you have lower ranked, but that you think there's a very good probability that you'll be able to get with a subsequent pick?
Depends on the player, and it depends if it's a quarterback, wide receiver, tight end situation where I'm trying to loop out the stack. So, for example, a situation where I would draft a guy well ahead of the market in order to, you know, ensure that I have the stack would be if I took Patrick Mahomes in the third round, I'm very likely going to be taking Mecole Hardman, you know, maybe 20 spots ahead of his ADP. I'll probably take Sammy Watkins 10 spots ahead of his ADP. If I take Lamar Jackson, I'm going to guarantee that after I take Lamar Jackson, my next pick is going to be Mark Andrews.
Right.
If I take Dak Prescott, I'm going to take Michael Gallup with the next selection. I think where you get yourself into trouble with that philosophy, though, is with running backs. So I think that a great example of this would be you're sitting there in the fourth round. You have Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, Raheem Mostert, J.K. Dobbins as the top guy on your board. They would be kind of, you know, disastrous selections there, because with every round, you know, with every pick higher that a running back goes, the more you are relying on them for that 200 plus PPR point season.
Right.
And, you know, the less that you can rely on the range of outcomes. So I tend to think that really, in terms of reaching, you should not be doing it with running backs very often.
So even in that hypothetical Raven stack, you wouldn't necessarily reach for Mark Ingram, for example.
So that's actually interesting, because Ingram was not a guy, you know, that we projected to catch a ton of passes in that offense last year. Generally, we see in offenses with running quarterbacks that running backs see a dip in their receptions. Ingram just, you know, kind of ran pretty hot last year. But Ingram is the profile of a guy I don't like much anyways. You know, didn't even play 50% of the snaps last season before they drafted J.K. Dobbins. Still was not super involved in the receiving game, but scored a bunch of receiving touchdowns. And I believe he is just about to turn 31 years old. So that would be an example of a guy where I would not reach to close that stack out.
So you're doing it for structural reasons. Before we get Scott's view on this, let me just quickly state my view. And I guess for pure best available athlete reasons, Davis and I agree that that's something that you shouldn't do. Like, you shouldn't have that much confidence in your ability to rank the guys irrespective of ADP. But I think the point that I want to make is a lot of people think that it's super aggressive to just get your guy. And I actually think the super aggressive thing to do is to wait and get another guy who you like almost as much as your guy, and then try to double up and get the guy that you like more closer to his actual ADP. So I think a lot of times we mischaracterize what the aggressive move is. I think the more conservative thing to do is to reach, strictly for best available athlete reasons on your draft board. But Scott, what are your thoughts?
You know, I'm always going to be more of an art drafter than a science drafter. Not that there's anything wrong with modeling or being more maybe centered in a draft strategy. I think of it like there was I forget who it was, but somebody who I follow on my timeline had a bet on Dustin Johnson to win the PGA Championship, which was last week, and Johnson was the leader into Sunday, and he had an opportunity to hedge and just, you know, get rid of some of his Johnson shares or all of them and lock in a profit, or he could play for the big win, because his odds were obviously, you know, anybody's odds are going to be fairly long before the tournament, because there's just so many players. You know, come Sunday, most of the people can't win the tournament, and although there actually were a lot of people who could win on Sunday. And I know it depends is not a satisfying fantasy answer, but I agree with what Mike was saying, in the sense that especially when you pick somewhere remotely tied to the end, although you can do this in the middle of your draft too. The thing is, when you're in the middle and there's a good player that you want that you're not prepared to take yet, you just know there's going to be like 10 more picks, and the chances are that player is interesting to somebody else. I find this happens a lot more to me when I'm maybe in the 3 spot, the 4 spot, or something like that. I see a couple of guys, I'd really like to get one. And I just think sometimes you have to give yourself a chance to get lucky. Like sometimes you're playing Scrabble, you have a rack, a couple tiles are good, a couple tiles are bad. You can make maybe a good scoring play or a play that makes sense tactically. It's going to leave you with like 3 vowels and you have like a lawful leave. And sometimes you just give yourself a chance to get lucky that what you pick will balance your rack out, even though you're starting from a bad position. So I think we have to be looking for spots where we think we can play that arbitrage. And again, this is a very inexact thing. Sometimes you'll be drafting in a room you don't know anybody. Or maybe even everybody knows you and you don't know them. You know, there's leagues like that. And then there's other leagues where you're drafting where you know everybody. It's a pretty static league and you've been drafting with these guys for 10 years and you can make inferences, you know, versus there's going to be other draft rooms. It's like you just walked into a casino. You've never played poker with anybody there. You don't know anybody. You know, you can make a guess on the way somebody's dressed or the way they arrange their chips, but you really don't know anything yet. So perhaps you have to play it straightforward. I know that that's kind of a rambling answer that isn't very specific, but I do think it's a depends situation. I would be looking, though, when it makes sense to try to find arbitrage situations.
Now, Davis was talking about the hypothetical chief stack, and he actually came close to executing it, which is increasingly difficult to do, given mostly for the reasons of Mahomes. It used to be that the kind of chalky way to do it was like Hill, Kelsey, and then Mahomes. Now I think it's more Edwards, Hill or Kelsey, and then hope that you get Mahomes in the third round. So you went for like the rich man's chief stack, and then I kind of got like a poor man's chief stack. So did you make those two picks, Davis, thinking that Mahomes could be your third round pick, or were those just guys that you wanted irrespective of any sort of structural reason?
Well, I definitely wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire irrespective. So I have Clyde Edwards-Helaire ranked as my number 5 running back after Elliott and before Cook. I don't even think that's controversial anymore at this point. And so to get him there at 10, where I selected in this draft, seemed like pretty much a layup. And then once I had taken Clyde Edwards-Helaire and my choices were between, so this, I don't know how many, you know, I don't know how many drafts you guys have done, but I've been putting in quite a few. And a lot of the times, in some of these, you know, high stakes leagues, some of these tight end premium formats, you can actually still get Devontae Adams in the second round because people are so hungry for running backs and for Travis Kelce and George Kittle in these high stakes leagues. So I saw a chance to take Tyreek in the second round where I have not actually been able to do that often. And then another thing that you see in these expert leagues, in industry leagues, is that quarterbacks generally fall around to, you know, 5 picks to a round after their, you know, overall public ADP. So I kind of gave it, you know, a 40 to 50% chance that Mahomes would come back there for me at the tail end of the third round. That was my plan, of course, you know, the best laid plans of men. And I missed out on Mahomes by 2 picks.
Now, as far as Edwards-Helaire, I'm interested in what both of you think. This is for strictly modeling reasons. You would hope that a running back that you select in that spot would score, let's call it like 275 PPR points, right? And rookies drafted in the first and second round this century, I think 6% of them reach that threshold. And I guess the question is, since no one was really in on Edwards-Helaire as like an elite, you know, underwear Olympics spark talent, which I think is very overrated anyway, how much do you increase the probability in your sort of ballparking it, especially you, Davis, since you took him?
Of him busting?
No, of him actually reaching that threshold. So in other words, if the base rate is 6% in this offense, which is very likely to be the best offense in football, I think we would all agree, what do you think that just so significantly increases that probability?
Can I jump in here for a second?
Go ahead.
I'm uncomfortable putting what's historically happened in those parameters on Edwards-Helaire because this is unquestionably the best offense in football, with, I think we all agree, the best quarterback in football, and the and probably the best play designer in football. So
yes,
to hold down Edwards-Helaire because of historically how other guys have disappointed or been underwhelming when they didn't land in as cherry a spot as you could have. This is the slot machine already has the 3-7s up. You know, it's, the money is already pouring, you know, down from the bottom of the machine. And so I that when we address this, the way we frame it, and I'm not picking on you, Mike, it's just I don't want to hold that history against Edwards-Helaire. And I also just want
exactly
to make one last comment about the stacks. One thing that's really important to me, if I'm going to consider anything stackable, I know we play in a lot of different fantasy formats, and so in a lot of fantasy formats, it just makes sense to swing for upside. You're trying to win. Nobody wins anything in fifth place in this league, and the second and third place payouts are so minor that you might as well not even consider them. But, you know, upside certainly has to rule the day. But what I would like about the Chiefs, I'd like it even more if maybe Watkins would just disappear, is I hope this tree is narrow enough. I hope the distribution of where the ball goes is narrow enough. I think of what the Broncos did in 2013, where Manning threw, 55 touchdowns or something like that, and then they all went to, he had three receivers who had double-digit touchdowns, he had a tight end who had double-digit touchdowns, and they had no Sean Moreno, who ran in 10 and caught three. So you knew exactly, like the Sean Payton, let's get Taysom Hill on the field. It wasn't like, let's get the fullback three touchdowns, let's be cute and throw to our fourth receiver. They were so concentrated and explosive that that made for a perfect situation. I just hope the Chiefs, what I've struggled with sometimes is this Hardman and Watkins, are they kind of get in each other's way? Is the tree narrow enough that we can get our max benefit from it? Now, because Mahomes and Reed are so good, and of course Kelsey's a good, you know, on a Hall of Fame trajectory too, I'm inclined to say that's not a big deal. But back to your original question, I'm uncomfortable using historical trends and data to apply to Helaire just because he's Edwards-Helaire, because he's landing and you could not get in a better spot than where he's in. And not to mention, since he's been drafted, one of his competitors for the ball is no longer on the roster.
But I was stipulating that. So if the base rate is 6%, the question I had for Davis is, what does he assess the probability of that kind of elite, you know, first round worthy running back performance to be with Edwards-Helaire?
I mean, I think that if he doesn't get injured, he is, you know, one of the biggest locks of our time to finish as, you know, one of the five best running backs in fantasy.
Okay.
He has every advantage that there is. So he has a coach who is, you know, very good at giving running backs easy receptions. We know that easy receptions are basically easy receptions and touchdowns are where fantasy points come for running backs. And he set those up for Damian. He set those up for Kareem Hunt. He, of course, you know, before Kansas City, he set those up for, you know, 10 different running backs, basically. You know, we pick a run like not only Brian Westbrook, but a lot of guys in Philadelphia who were very much just the guys who were able to have success in that, you know, in that offense. And he gets to do it for, and I actually think this is the biggest key that people are missing if they are not willing to put Clyde Edwards-Helaire in that situation. Kansas City last season in neutral game scripts was the second most pass-heavy team in NFL history. Only the 2013 New Orleans Saints threw the ball more in neutral game scripts. So if Kansas City gets in more competitive games, you know, let's say Denver's a little bit better, let's say the Raiders don't roll over and die in both of the divisional games, and you know, of course the Chiefs are playing a first place, you know, Super Bowl quality schedule, so we expect that they should be in more competitive games, you know, we could see a 700 pass attempt season from Patrick Mahomes. And you might say, well, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire plays running back, why do I want them passing all the time? Well, target is basically worth about three times as much as a carry. We would accept 190 Clyde Edwards-Helaire carries if that meant he got 85 targets from Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's probably more likely to reach his ceiling with 90 targets than he would be with 250 carries. So
yes.
I just think basically everything is setting up for Clyde Edwards-Helaire to have, you know, just this monstrous rookie season.
So best
I want to focus on one key thing that Davis said, which I think is extremely important, and it speaks to a tweet that he had a couple days ago where he showed a video of all the easy catches and walk-in touchdowns that Mark Andrews had in Baltimore. And when you say, like, why do we want the elite play designers and the elite offenses. I mean, great players can make men miss. They can beat a defense that is, in theory, in line to stop a play. They can still make a guy miss. They can make a contested catch, and that's all great. But what also great players routinely get is the benefit of being wide open and having touchdowns that are, or big plays that are hardly even defended because they've been so well designed or schemed. And again, that video that showed Andrews, it shows how well Greg Roman is able to use Andrews. It's hard enough to cover Andrews when you're trying or when you know what's going on, but so many times they're able to fool the defense and get him a walk-in touchdown or a walk, just a really easy chunk play. And you're going to see that, you know, if you watch like the McCall Hardman tape, I mean, a lot of the plays, he's just running
faster. He's never covered. McCall Hardman is never covered.
Right. I mean, or, you know, how many times do you see Tyreek Hill just, the defender isn't in the screen, you know? So it's not just that these guys can run past people and can win contestedly or make an outstanding play, but because they're tied to these offensive design, and there aren't that many of them. I think Roman's one of those guys. I think Reed's one of those guys. Obviously, Shanahan is one of those guys. It's the simplest thing in the world. It's the most obvious thing in the world. I'm not trying to present this like it's something illuminary, but identify the handful of teams that have those offenses that can scheme those easy plays. And as a Patriots fan, by the way, the last few seasons, watching their 18-play drives where they had to throw to like a covered Julian Edelman to get 7 yards and get a first down, it's so frustrating. There's no chunk plays. There's no explosiveness. Nothing is ever easy, and it's incredibly frustrating. We want to go where the plays are easy.
But I want to draw a distinction between the Chiefs' offense and the Ravens' offense, where I think the Ravens are a unicorn offense, and that's how they get those wide-open plays. And, you know, I think the question there is if there's ever going to be a defensive adjustment that makes things much more difficult, like we've seen in playoff games for Lamar Jackson. But the Chiefs' offense, in contrast, I don't really know. It's not a unicorn offense. It's just an elite talent offense with great scheming combined. It's almost like how the Niners used to be with Bill Walsh. And when Jerry Rice was getting all those easy catches, it was just because, well, you know, if you loaded up to stop Rice, there were four other guys who were going to beat you. So,
well, you know what,
I just think it's much more projectable.
I get the point you're saying, but what if, let me just play devil's advocate. I think Andrews is a special player, and it's impressive what he's done. I think he has diabetes, and he's still an elite athlete.
He does.
What if Hollywood Brown is like a DeSean Jackson type when he's healthy? Because he's hurt all last year, and like, and now all of Twitter is like is racing to put the Hollywood flag down, like everybody likes him. But, and what if Dobbins is a special player? Maybe they could be. You know, the unicorn element is Jackson, and
that's
how much
true.
Is he going to run and everything? I just think they have skill talent. We can't assume that Brown is a superstar or is even just like a Jackson type of field stretcher, although I think he's a good chance to be that guy. And Dobbins, if you watched him in college, and that isn't, look, there's no guarantee he'll be a great player in college. But, oh my God, if this offense, if Brown is what he could be and Dobbins is the player I saw at Ohio State,
yeah,
I think they could be more than just a unicorn gimmicky offense.
That's fair. So, Davis, why don't you talk a little bit about – so Edwards-Helaire, you were obviously very happy with. The other interesting pick I thought you had, and we'll forget about Fournette that was auto-drafted.
I got to say, at least I can say now that I'm not an extremist because at least I have one Fournette team somewhere anywhere. It was a mistake. I auto-drafted my – I was having, but I mean, you know what? It was the 10th pick of the fourth round. It seems fine. That seems fine to take Fournette there, I guess.
I think the interesting thing that you did was with the receivers, and I'd like you to talk about that because you have a lot to say about the receivers. So Calvin Ridley in the third round, which is near the earliest I've seen him taken. Michael Gallup in the fifth round, and then you kind of stacked the Cowboys passing offense because you have Prescott, Gallup, and then CeeDee Lamb you took in the eighth round. So why don't you talk about, you know, your thoughts there as far as your receiving core after Tyreek Hill?
So this draft and the sharper drafts are always like this, right? Where the wide receivers get pushed up the board, the bad bet running backs get pushed down the board. So I basically knew that, you know, I started out Tyreek and Clyde Edwards-Helaire wasn't able to get Mahomes. I get auto-drafted Fournette. I'm not exactly sure what I would have done. I probably would have taken A.J. Brown there and then tried to get Tannehill later. But, I'm sitting there. I'm looking at the board.
Brown was gone, actually.
Okay, so I'm looking at it backwards. Yeah I would have taken
I took Brown, Davis. Back off.
Very sharp. I would have taken DJ Shark there had I been looking at my phone. I don't know why I wasn't. I would have taken DJ Shark. But so I'm there on the board looking at Michael Gallup as basically the last of that tier of wide receiver for me. So I have him, you know, kind of in my rankings way above Tyler Boyd, way above Marvin Jones, way above Dante Johnson, way above Jarvis Landry. I do like Will Fuller, but the fifth round is very early for Fuller.
Yeah.
And I know that quarterbacks are going a little bit later in this draft than normal. So I thought that there was a pretty good chance I would be able to get Dak Prescott to back him up with. I have Dak as my third quarterback in my rankings and as my projections. You know, the Dallas Cowboys led the NFL in yards per play last year by, and it wasn't even close, right? They actually smoked the Kansas City Chiefs in by 0.3 yards per play, you know, over a 1,000 play sample. That's massive. And I expect them to probably be better on offense this year with Jason Garrett, you know, not in charge of, you know, whether they're going for it or not. And, you know, basically I think CeeDee Lamb is, again, you know, just going to walk in day one and be the slot wide receiver. He has no competition there. His competition for snaps would be undrafted free agent Cedric Wilson, or if the Cowboys wanted to play more heavy personnel, it would be Dalton Schultz. So right. I see basically no chance that Lamb is not out there for 50% of the snaps in week one. You know, Tavon Austin, long time Cowboys, the fans actually loved him, but he's not even on the team anymore. So I felt incredibly good about those decisions. And not only that, but in this format, Blake Jarwin has a really late ADP. So I felt that even if I missed on Lamb, I would be able to get Jarwin and fill in that tight end slot that I needed.
Now, we have a history of Boyd in one of the leagues that we did where he was a very successful player.
We got him for free.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I remember we both agreed that we liked his upside when he was pretty much just a disappointment early in his career, but then looked like he could kind of like walk into some target volume. But weren't you impressive by what Boyd did last year? I'm not saying this just because I drafted Boyd, and I draft Boyd a lot, but I'm interested in your take, actually, which is contrarian to my take about Boyd, it seems.
So in like a vacuum where I'm not looking at what he costs in drafts, I like him, but he's getting squeezed by AJ Green. He's getting squeezed by T. Higgins. He's getting squeezed by John Ross. Of course, the team is doing that thing all teams do in the offseason where they talk about they're going to throw their stud running back, who they are, you know, likely going to give a terrible contract to. They're going to throw the ball to him more. So I think that Boyd is a great stopgap player. You know, I think that he's pretty likely to churn out 190 to 210 PPR points, but, you know, just very, like, a very low ceiling overall. And I think that Gallup offers very similar floor and an astronomical ceiling, comparatively speaking.
Because of the differences in the offense.
As far as Boyd goes, though, I can easily talk down all of his quote-unquote competition. Green's been hurt for several years in a row.
Yes, that's true.
Higgins is a rookie.
Ross.
And I know there's differing opinions of what the onboard will be for rookies. In 2011, it wasn't a problem with a truncated offseason, so maybe he'll be a quick
plus
study.
He's old, man. He's like, you know, he's not really a rookie, in my view.
I'm not sure Ross can play. Ross strikes me as a guy who'll be out of the league. I know he had some splash plays last year, but he drops a ton of passes, and drops only matter to the point that they hurt your future opportunities. And when you're not an established receiver, I think you can't afford to drop the ball, because then it sometimes phases you out. But I feel very confident that, not that there's anything wrong with Gallup, and what Davis is able to do is he believes this Dallas offense is super explosive. Obviously Kansas City is, and he's got a major foothold. This is like the way
in the two best offenses.
This is the way we like to draft in a playoff league, where you try to get like a foothold on one conference and a foothold in the other conference, and then if they ever make the Super Bowl, you crush everybody.
Or it's like a DFS team, but every week.
Right. And you know, when the Garrett thing was finally over in Dallas, I'm sure any good head coach, as long as they could coexist with Jones, and, you know, Jones is, you know, you have to deal with the bluster of him and the fact that he's going to have a hand in the personnel decisions. But that team is a sleeping giant. They have, like, within their range of outcomes, like 13-3, number one seed. That's possible. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there's only a handful of teams I think you could say that about, it being realistic. I think Dallas is one of those teams.
Now, I went very basic with the running back, but I the reason why I did it is because I really do think that those guys, I will only draft a running back early if I think he has a at least a 50% chance to be a top five running back. And I felt that that was the case. And there's maybe like eight guys or nine guys like that at most, you know, oftentimes less. But I feel that Mixon and Drake both have that opportunities. Where do you guys stand on that?
I like both those picks. You know, Mixon's beaten a bad setup for the last couple of years, which impresses me. And with Drake, it's really simple. First of all, he wasn't a full-timer in college. He went to the school that has the most, you know, the strongest conveyor belt of talent, that it's really hard to get a job to yourself because they always have other people who are really good. He played 2 months in Arizona. And I know it's the air raid offense, but it's designed to set up really easy running lanes. When Kenyon Drake hit Arizona 8 games, and that, which is a pretty meaty sample, I think, he was the running back 4 in PPR. So he's done it. Mm. I mean, it's not a full season, but I think Drake is very defensible. My feeling has always been with running backs, I think as long as you're not forcing it, as long as you're not saying, oh, geez, I have to take one. I really don't like Josh Jacobs, but I'll take him. Don't play it that way.
Yeah, don't do that. If you actually like the guy, if you actually like Mixon, if you actually like Drake, you should be hammering them because all.
Like, I don't like Chubb, for example.
Exactly.
You know your first couple of picks should be, if you're not excited about the guy, take somebody else. You should really like your first couple of guys because there's more than enough players to stock the league. And once the later rounds come in, you have to start doing things you might not like as much, depending on how your league goes. But I think Mixon, I think Burrow's going to be. I like the fact that he's actually a year older. Some people might hold that against him. I think he might be more prepared to come into the league.
I agree with that 100%.
And again, Mixon's beaten a bad setup. And what if it isn't a bad setup anymore? What if they're like kind of like a frisky 6-10, 7-9 team, which I think they might be. And maybe it'll be a little bit of a carnival if the defense is bad. So you might get some of that up-tempo in the second half. I will go to battle. I'm not saying Mixon and Drake are my biggest targets necessarily. But it comes down to this. They're proactive picks for me. I'd be perfectly happy with this start.
And you feel the same way? I mean, where are you on Mixon with the targets? Let me just throw a stat at you before you answer, Davis. Mixon, I did 100 targets or more the last 2 years combined. And I sorted by success rate. Number one is Christian McCaffrey, and this is success rate based on percentage of yards needed for the down to be viewed as successful. It's a set thing for every down. McCaffrey is first with 56.6%. The base rate's about 44%. Joe Mixon on 100 exactly 100 targets is 50%, which is fifth best. Does that mean anything to you, Davis, as far as the likelihood of more targets?
Just if I want to approach this like a simpleton, I would say Joe Mixon seems to be good. The coaching staff there seems to think that he's pretty good. But, I mean, they gave Gio Bernard is the sixth highest paid running back in the NFL.
Oh, I know. It's so
true.
Sickening.
Sounds about
and,
right.
And Gio Bernard is going to take all the good snaps. So, like, not all the good snaps, but snaps that are very important towards Mixon going from being the second tier of running backs to being
the third down and the we're trailing in desperate snaps.
But wait a minute. I don't remember him being useful the last couple of years. When has that happened before? I just don't know why that would be different now.
Bernard himself is not useful. That's not the issue. So Bernard being on the being a fantasy relevant guy actually is not useful at all. It's just that he is keeping Mixon from being on the field at really important times for his fantasy value.
I look at Bernard, and I don't know if he was dinged up some of last year, but I'm looking at his stat page. 16 games and he touched the ball 83 times, and that doesn't faze me at all.
How many of those
plus
were
there's
catches?
No third guy here. There's no third guy here they mess with.
How many of those guys of those were catches, Scott?
He had 30 catches and 53 rushing.
But he played 443 snaps. Mixon played 653, 59% of the snaps to 40% of the snaps.
I understand what you're saying, Scott, but I hate this about Mixon.
I guess my point is, and look, Davis made the key point earlier about how much more valuable, and I know Mike makes this point all the time, how much more valuable it is for a running back to catch the ball than run the ball. But the fact is, if we have to live with Mixon living with 35 or 40 catches instead of the 60 or 70 that he could surely handle, that's why he's a late first round pick. If he was going to get that reception volume, he could maybe go fourth, fifth, or sixth, and then instead he'll go around the turn. He may even slip into the second round. Sometimes. I'm okay. I can live with that.
But there is a chance that they will come to their senses and do the thing that the stats say that they should be doing. And plus, we know that Burrow likes to throw to his. Here's my operating theory with Mixon. Not only has he been a very effective receiver in context. Based on his success rate. But he's getting a quarterback now who we just saw really likes to throw to his running backs. He threw a ton of passes for a college offense to Edwards-Helaire. So my belief is that throwing to running backs is more quarterback-driven than scheme-driven. What are your thoughts on that, Davis?
I can buy that for... like checkdowns and stuff, but we know that there are some coaches that really like to do it, that they like to design those wheel routes. I mean, the fundamental play of the air raid is mesh, and the running back is the second read on that. So if the X wide receiver, if his option route is not open, the second read for the quarterback is the running back, and more teams are installing that as kind of like, you know, if they're in a hurry up, if they're on second and eight, like they're calling mesh. So I think that maybe like that's true in the West Coast offense. I think maybe that's true in a lot of these, you know, under the center offenses. But I think as more and more teams are playing that 11 personnel, you know, wide split and using the mesh play, I think that offenses are going to be designing those throws.
And again, think of the quarter, the offensive designers we respect the most, Reed, Shanahan, Belichick, you know, / McDaniels, Sean Payton, Sean McVay, when Gurley was healthy, you know, which feels like a million years ago. They all realize how it's like stealing. They can throw to their backs proactively and get like these easy 8 to 15 yards.
Right, games. and they have a McVay disciple, right? Although we kind of forget about that, but
yeah. I mean, he got his job because he's like married to someone who's related to the Bengals owner's daughter. But it is true that Zach Taylor is a guy who coached under McVay.
To put a cap on Mixon, I think you get him at his floor, and I still think there might be some untapped upside here.
Like, it wouldn't shock me the only thing Mixon needs is proper usage to be in the conversation for the RB1, but. Whether and I guess that he needs Burrow to be a very successful in context rookie quarterback, but you know, considering he was the most successful college quarterback in history, that's not a fantastic leap
and
in my mind.
Even if he just turns into a foundational brick for you, I see nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm much more accepting of a guy in that slot being like RB8 or RB10 than maybe you might be, but. I think he'll be fine. I think the key to your start is probably if Drake is legitimate or not, which I think he probably is, but I don't think we can assume that's a sure thing. So, but if Drake pops, that really looks like a nice start for you.
So, Scott, let's talk about your team. You took Barkley, and Barkley on that list is actually last. There's only 20 guys that have gotten 100 targets or more in the last 2 years combined, and he's last in play success rate. So, but I understand, you know, the market perception is that Barkley is a good receiver, and I know that Scott's take on this is going to be, I don't care if he's a good receiver or not, as long as they keep giving him catches. So, I guess he was down last year, about 2 targets per game, but he was hurt. Do you think that Barkley is a 100 target running back or a 70 target running back?
Well, I mean, Jason Garrett's in town, so we get to assume the Giants are going to the moon, right? My draft's pretty boring, and it illustrates how much I don't like picking second. I think Adam Levitan was making this point earlier. He's like, you know, give me the first pick and I'll take McCaffrey. If I don't have the first pick, I'd like to draft much later in the first round, and I will co-sign with that. In the 2 spot, you could take Barkley, you could take Kamara, you could take Elliott, you could take Cook. Some people might take Michael Thomas. I wouldn't, but I can see at least the rationale behind it. I just think the opportunity to get a true, unequivocal bell cow is hard to ignore. And you hit the nail on the head for me with Barkley. I just need the Giants to believe that he's a good receiver and to keep him on the field and give him some of that cheap floor volume.
And Davis, You have a take on this too, right? With Barkley, like as far as his the likelihood of him
the whole organization has to justify the draft capital spent on him, and I'm not saying that tongue in cheek in any way. I think it's 100% true organizationally that they want him to win, you know, Player of the Year, MVP. Like they want to get him 2,000 yards and 25 touchdowns. Yeah. They want him to be LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah. It helps that there, as far as I know, there's nothing exciting behind him on the depth chart. It's not like they have an Austin
Wayne Gallman.
It's gonna be like, why isn't he playing more? You know.
Well, they got Deion Lewis now for third downs, but Lewis looked like he was shot.
Should he even be in the league anymore? I mean, Tennessee didn't want to play him.
Yeah. And then you went with the three receivers, Scott. Galladay, Robinson, Woods. Galladay. And what are your thoughts on this, Dave? Is Galladay is the king of the air yards model. Is that something that you put a lot of stock in, Davis?
Yeah, because we want a greater amount of targets further down the field. So I love that. And Galladay is really interesting because Detroit has played this really slow, plodding offense for so long. And, you know, there were some signs we got last year that they actually were trying to speed things up a little bit. Galladay ends up in a weird range for me, though, because you're oftentimes deciding between Galladay and Chris Godwin, Galladay and Mike Evans. Sometimes it's even Galladay and you get the option to take, like, Austin Eckler or someone like that. So Galladay ends up being a guy I take when he falls to the third round. I don't often take him there at the tail end of the second.
Where are you on Mike Evans? That's a guy that now there's an air yards guy, but what do you do as far as the change in the quarterback?
I mean, I think it's inarguable that he is the player most injured by the quarterback change. I think that he and Jameis were a great stylistic fit. I think that he and Brady are unlikely to be a good stylistic fit. The thing is that we can talk to ourselves blue in the face about, like, boundary wide receivers and this offensive formation and this. Mike Evans has been a 1,000-yard wide receiver every year of his career.
And he's super efficient.
Yeah, he is uncoverable. He can run any route. Like, Mike Evans is a historically underrated player. He's great. So I have no concerns about his ability to produce, even though I think that Godwin is likely to be the more targeted wide receiver.
I have a lot of Evans shares, and I just think he's incapable of having a bad season. And even though the stylistic differences between Winston and Brady, it's a totally valid point. But let's also remember, Winston wasn't really a good quarterback, and Evans has played with a lot of bad quarterbacks. He's never had a bad season. I just took Galladay here just to have a little bit more diversity of my portfolio. Godwin's already off the board. If you look at all the receivers who are
I think Galladay is well worth the 23rd
pick.
Yeah,
I'm totally fine with it. But Galladay, Evans, DJ Moore, Robinson, Juju, Cooper, Ridley, Beckham, Thielen, they were the next nine receivers. So those guys are all pretty closely bunched for me. And I could talk them all up and talk them all down. I mean, it was exciting to see what Dable did with the Detroit offense when Stafford was healthy for 2 months. And I also was impressed that Galladay didn't totally pumpkin when he was playing with guys who really shouldn't be in the league. They started 2 months of the season for the Lions. I mean, they lost all those games, but Galladay still produced at a reasonable... He took a hit from Stafford being hurt, but he didn't collapse. I would have been fine with... You know, DJ Moore has to play with Bridgewater. We'll see how that works out. You know, Robinson has never played with a good quarterback. I mean, it's to the point that people are hoping Nick Foles emerge. That's how bad it's been for Allen Robinson, that Nick Foles is like a borderline savior. Juju had a terrible year last year. Who knows? You know, Roethlisberger's like 38 going on 58. There's a lot of competition for the ball in Dallas, so I could get somebody being maybe a little bit squeamish on Cooper. As great as Ridley is, it's still the Julio Jones show until further notice. Although I do think they have a narrow tree there, and we'll have to throw the ball a lot. Beckham, you know, he can go off the reservation at any point, and Mike can talk about his Beckham pick. I don't think it's a bad pick in the third round. Thielen's going to get all that volume, but I mean, it's still an offense that wants to run the ball.
Plus, he was bad last year and
hurt. Is he good enough to be the one main threat in an offense? I know they drafted a first round receiver.
That is a very good question.
But if teams decide, hey, we're taking Thielen out of the game, is he good enough to offset that? I usually think elite talents can do it. I'm not quite sure that I would put Thielen in that group. But
do you put Thielen in that group, Davis?
So my projections love Adam Thielen, Like, I can't do anything to my projections to make them not like Adam Thielen, basically.
Yeah.
But
but
I,
you don't.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they might just be this crazy boring offense that isn't going to score that many touchdowns. Obviously, he's a little bit older than a lot of the other guys he's being drafted around. So you just, you know, kind of every year a guy gets older, you build in some injury concerns, you build in, you know, some just like lack of positive performance. Like, there, I just think there are some ways that it can go bad. But I do think he's, pretty much a fine selection.
I think with Allen Robinson, my expectation is still Trubisky's going to start. They seem wedded to Trubisky.
Well, let me say this other thing about my roster build. So I started with Barkley, and I knew, unless some really unlikely running back fell to me, that I was happy to take in round two or round three. I just wasn't going to go there. So this is a best ball league. My goal was going to be Barkley. Hopefully he is hale for most of the season. He'll be a foundational guy who will score for me most weeks. And then I just wanted to get a really strong complement of receivers. And I really wasn't even concerned about who they were. I just wanted to throw four or five receivers out there, knowing that the odds of three of them scoring well in a given week are pretty good. And so I got Galladay, Robinson, Woods, Marvin Jones. And I wasn't really even thinking Jones and Galladay being in the same team, but that's fine.
That's actually not bad if you believe in Stafford.
In a narrow tree, I think it actually works pretty well because it's one guy doesn't do it, then the other guy will. But maybe I wouldn't do it in seasonal because I wouldn't want to play them together because it limits your upside.
Right.
But I was just looking to get – I was just going to throw volume at the position and get five receivers I liked. And, maybe I took – did I take Jones before Deontay Johnson? Or I guess Johnson went right before Jones. I don't know how I would have played that. But I just wanted to have
That's a question that a lot of people are going to have to ask, Johnson or Jones.
I'm going to go the anchors away thing. Get my running back anchor, and then I'm going to try to have the deepest receivers, top-end receivers in the league. And maybe I do, maybe I don't. You know, some other teams really attacked us. As Davis said, this was a league that attacked receivers proactively. So, they all got kind of pushed up a little bit. But I feel good with the five guys I got.
Davis, where are you on QB-centric wide receiver drafting generally and Allen Robinson specifically? And I guess give me your take on whether you think it's going to be Trubisky or Foles and whether you think that makes a big difference.
I think it's going to be Trubisky, likely. I don't think it makes any difference. But again, kind of actually similar to Galladay. He ends up being like a guy I like fine. My projections like him. Actually kind of like Thielen. My projections like him more than I do. But like I love DJ Moore. I love Juju Smith-Schuster, I love A.J. Brown, and I love Amari Cooper. So I end up taking Allen Robinson less often than I end up taking those other guys.
And what
I love all those other guys too, but you can certainly talk them down. I mean, Brown has to live with Tannehill, who will never
right.
have that season he just had. Although a key thing with Brown, we may have mentioned this on this podcast, people look at the efficiency of Brown, which was through the roof, and it's very convenient to say, well, he'll never have that efficiency again, to which I say, well, it's like Tyler Lockett in 2018. He had a perfect quarterback rating on targeted balls. Of course, a lot of that is Wilson, and people say he'll never match that, and I say, fine, but if he gets enough of a volume bump, and I still think Lockett deserved more targets than he got, but in the case of Brown, he doesn't, as long as he stays on the field, and they recognize him as the important player that he is, that I'm sure they've figured out now, he can give up a lot of efficiency and have the increase in opportunity make up for most of that, maybe even make up for all of that.
Yeah, and he's a guy, to me, he's like a 10 yards per target guy. I'd be very surprised if he didn't come close to that number. Where are you, Davis, on the – because then Scott took Robert Woods. How do you ranking Kupp and Woods is very difficult. I don't know – some people present it as a floor versus ceiling argument, but to me, irrespective of Woods' struggle in scoring touchdowns, I actually think that both of them have high floors. Maybe Cooper has the higher ceiling, but where are you on the Rams wide receiver?
I mean Woods, right? I think so. There are a couple situations where you can tend to tell people who are very thoughtful about the game, or people who are very good at the game and how they mine out those situations. I think one of them is Kupp versus Woods. You tend to see sharper players take Woods. You tend to see the the brasher, louder people be all over Kupp. And the other one before LeSean McCoy was Ronald Jones and Keyshawn Vaughn, where the sharper players tend to gravitate towards towards Jones, and the, you know, players I would not like as much would tend to gravitate towards Vaughn. So I really like that Wood selection from Pianowski.
Is this because of the slot issue with Kupp? I guess I'm more in the Kupp camp. I don't, you know, it's not that I'm like,
wow,
targeting Kupp.
Dunked on you, Salfino.
You did. That's fine.
Well,
we knew
Mike wasn't a sharp player. It's fine.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly
right.
All of America.
You know, but it's not something that I feel. I like Woods a lot, and I actually now would prefer to just, since they're so close, to draft more Woods to make my portfolio more balanced. But is this the Kupp in the slot argument in terms of like his yards per route run?
No, it's just I think that Woods profiles better. They use him in, you know, a wider way. They, like, he gets carries, he plays, you know, pretty much all over the formation. Like I think he pretty clearly is the higher valued player inside of that organization. So yeah, I think that one is, and you know, Kupp, of course, we always look at guys who are boosted by touchdowns, and Kupp big time boosted by touchdowns. Woods basically one of the most unlucky touchdown variance guys in fantasy.
Is it unlucky
right
at
now.
This point though with Woods, considering he's never scored touchdowns?
Well, he had 7 2 years ago. I think the thing with Woods is that 3 was unlucky. And it's probably you project him to score 6 or 7 or,
yeah,
5 or whatever, like, whatever it is. But that's okay. If you told me he scored 6 or 7 touchdowns and had the same usage in a Sean McVay offense, and I think one of the sneaky things about Woods is because he gets the ball on so many running. I mean, he's had 115 and 157 rushing yards the last 2 years. Very high success rate on those plays. Those are not going away. So you have to view him as almost like a 1,300 yard receiver, because they're going to bake that into what his production is. I got him, you know, Kupp went the very early part of the fourth round. I got Woods at the very end of the round, so I got a much tidier price here. I don't have anything against Kupp. I think Woods is going to get touchdown regression positively. It's just, you know, he's not going to score 11 times. That's not in his range of outcomes, but I think he could score
Kupp's
7 times.
Kupp's been pretty good in scoring touchdowns, though.
One other thing, by the way, Davis said about, you know, some players identify, you can identify sharp players by who they like sometimes. I think Davis might have even said this. If it wasn't Davis, somebody else said it on Twitter. There is one player who goes in the middle part of a draft who I feel like everybody I respect tries to draft this guy. And I know Mike has tried to draft him. And I think Davis might have him in the fishbowl. I'm not positive of that. But I feel like all the people who I really respect all have Chase Edmonds.
Yeah, I do have Chase Edmonds in the fishbowl. Yeah, he is. Because he has paths to the standalone value, right? Where
I have Chase
Drake,
Edmonds in the fishbowl too, I think.
Right. I looked at the owners of the Edmonds. It's like, these are all the people I want to be. I mean, I don't make picks thinking who's already picked this guy. But once I saw who was in the Chase Edmonds room, I felt very comfortable in that room.
Yeah. So because he has paths to the standalone value, where like he did not last year play a ton of passing downs, but you could see him being the archetype of a guy who would play more passing downs. So he can, and then he's got, you know, this incredible contingent value where if Drake goes down, you know, he's kind of in like a Tony Pollard-esque situation where we could see him getting, you know, 80% of the backfield work and just crushing week after week.
It's kind of cool that the offense is called Air Raid. And there's plenty of things about the passing game we like, but oh, by the way, it's a really good offense for running the ball.
True.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm just seeing now because I'm curious whether I have... Oh, no, I don't have him in the
fishbowl.
Curiously,
none of us get Edmonds in this league. I forget where he went, but he went pretty
early. I have Boston Scott, who I think Davis likes, Duke Johnson, and...
I have Boston Scott in this one we did together.
And I have Antonio Gibson.
Yeah, I'm a Scott fan, too. The one guy Mike has who I wouldn't touch, although I know you got him really cheaply, is Sony Michel.
The news on Michel has gone straight into the toilet.
But he was the Amazon package that was broken the day they drafted him.
My view is he had 250 touches, and if you just do the modeling, like any team projected to win the division with a running back who got 250 carries is like – slam dunk, you know, ninth round pick.
I'm not willing to bet. Now, look, at least if you're going to take a shot.
Obviously now we know that
you don't have to call the shot ahead of time. That's nice. I don't think New England is any longer guaranteed 11 wins on the doorstep every year. Not with this current team. I don't see it. I think they're like a
true, but they are projected to win the division though. But I agree with that. That
Buffalo's
yeah, they're not
right there with them in win total expectation. I think they can't be that much difference between those two teams. The point is this:
probably not.
In the Belichick era, in the Belichick Brady era, they win double digit games every year. It's already etched on Football Reference. I think those days are gone until they get another quarterback. And I'm not really sure if Cam has anything left. We'll see. Maybe he will. I hate their skill players. God, I hate their skill talent. I think they're just going to be another team. Look, Belichick's unbelievable coach in a sport where coaching means more than any other sport, so you can't discount that. And I think Josh McDaniels is a really good coach, obviously, and he's running the offense. But I think the idea that previously we could say, well, we know New England's going to win 11 games, it's going to be a lot of positive game scripts, I'm not completely there with this version.
I agree with that. Davis, what is there a public take on the other very closely contested team wide receiver battle with Metcalf and Lockett? Is there a sharp/public take on that, or do
no,
you not think so?
No, because I think everyone who drafts those guys at ADP just realizes that you know, Russell Wilson's incredible, right? Like I don't I think that they both are very similar, and that the target volumes, they're just going to be weeks where they get three PPR points because Russell Wilson threw the ball 21 times and they won 18-10. I don't think that's a situation where you see the sharp versus public.
Who would you draft first?
Lockett, I think.
Yeah,
I think I'm
Metcalf.
Both of them.
I don't know if there's a wrong
first,
answer.
But I want some Metcalf too.
Yeah, wouldn't you agree, Davis, that Metcalf has the top five wide receiver upside, and Lockett does not?
No, because Lockett could just score 7 long touchdowns. I mean, we've seen this happen in fantasy football before where guys have just had year, like, you guys remember the Dwayne Bowe 16 touchdown season?
Yeah.
He literally scored like, I believe 8 touchdowns over 50 yards. And it was completely random. It was nothing but randomness. And I think that Lockett could benefit from that pretty clearly.
I don't see a wrong answer there. If somebody prefers one or the other, that's, I'll be like, yeah, I like Metcalf. Yeah, I like Lockett, and I love Russell Wilson. And they have another team with an extremely narrow tree. You know, Greg Olsen, as much as I've loved him, he's 100 years old. We'll see if another tight end emerges. Their running backs aren't major passing threats. So yeah, I think you can't go wrong with a narrow tree in Russell Wilson. Every game will be the same. They'll dick around for a half, and then they'll finally throw the keys to Wilson and tell him to win the game.
So Davis, in trying to answer this question, what I did was looked at wide receivers who the top two targeted wide receivers, and then I put them in buckets based on their size. And I forget the exact numbers, but the conclusion was that, you know, 4 out of 5 times the significantly bigger wide receiver ends up with the most targets.
Yeah, I buy that. Because that wide receiver is more likely to be the boundary guy, which is the more targeted role historically.
So wouldn't that push you towards Metcalf?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I don't want to get like too like football guy here, but like Metcalf literally runs one route, and there are ways.
Well, I thought
that
was the criticism. I thought that was the criticism coming into the league, but didn't he answer that somewhat?
It just did not matter that he only ran one route is what happened.
Plus, isn't it kind of a chicken egg thing that I see the advantages of the boundary receiver, but we also know how easy life is in the slot, where the routes are defined and the percentage, the efficiency of slot targets are a lot higher. And, you know, look at what the player Baldwin became.
Plus, Lockett's good on the boundary.
He's good on the sideline.
He's good getting his feet in. I mean,
I think it's a little bit of a fool's errand to try to prove who the alpha is here when they're both going to be really good. I don't think you really need to solve this.
In other words, it's more there's no wrong answer, so don't worry about what the right answer is.
Bingo.
Okay, I get that. Now, I have the poor man's chief stack, so Davis was thinking of doing this if he could, if he would have fallen into the Chiefs stack with Mahomes, which he didn't, but then I ended up doing it, and I think it's a very good strategy to get both Hardman and Watkins at ADP in a best ball format. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, the more cost-effective way to stack up Kansas City is to take Mahomes in the third round, Mecole Hardman in the ninth, and Sammy Watkins in like the 14th or whatever.
I don't think Hardman really gets into the ninth, though. Isn't he more, or is this just a function of best ball that he's an eighth round pick?
I mean, there's always someone who loves him, is the thing.
Well, he is the classic, and I know this is used as a crutch a lot, but he's the classic guy that's so much easier to swallow in best ball. Because
correct.
You know that yeah. explosion is coming, and you don't have to call the shot. And the week he goes 2 for 14, it doesn't matter. And he's a man. Look, I know you can get in trouble with your eyes, but you watch the tape of all of his touchdowns, and you're just like, "Oh my God, how could he have not?" And I know he's still learning the game and everything. And he was I think a defensive back when he first went into college or something like that. So he hasn't even played.
He's only been. This is going to be his fourth season as a full-time wide receiver of his whole life.
It's unfair if the Chiefs have him. That's the last thing they need is another guy who's faster than.
And they only drafted him.
They already had a guy like that.
Theoretically, they only drafted him because they thought that they were going to lose Hill.
Tyreek, yeah.
I don't know if that's the case. Maybe they would have anyway. Watkins to me is, and I know Scott pounded this all last year, and it was undeniably true. He had the 1 week and then he disappeared. And people like me who were like, that 1 week cannot be random, especially with Hill hurt. And you've got to try to get Watkins wherever you can, look like chumps. However, the weird thing about Watkins is then in the playoffs, in the most important games, he steps up as kind of, you know, the alpha receiver in the Chiefs offense, at least in terms of production. What do you make of Watkins, Davis? And then Scott, you could respond.
I mean, Scott does not like Watkins, and it saves him so much money, I'm sure. I am Lucy and the football with Watkins in Kansas City. I went from being a never Watkins truther, you know, back in my day. I just was like, you know, I never want to do it. I never want to do it with this guy. But now that he plays in Kansas City, now that he does not need as many targets to get there, I mean, I find myself, of course, you know, just running back to it. It's miserable, but you know, I mean, right now, probably a reasonable person could project Watkins for more fantasy points than Hardman in 2020.
Especially given the playoffs.
Right. Mike did it right. He took Hardman and Watkins in the format where they make the most sense. So now anytime you're watching a Chiefs game, or if you're not watching a Chiefs game, they go to a highlight and you see Mahomes throwing the ball deep, you know it might be to one of your guys. It's just really fun.
Yeah, any 5-touchdown day for Mahomes, those guys are one of those two guys is going to eat.
I like how you did it. The question is, do you have the stomach for them, either one of them, in seasonal? And as much as
that's very tough.
Hardman, I don't. I'm nervous about it. And Watkins, I probably won't draft in seasonal because I'm afraid that even when situations present themselves where Watkins should have an elevated role, very often he's fallen, you know, it's all lined up for him. Everything was in line for him last year. And I know Mahomes wasn't healthy all season, so that has to be factored in. But I feel like there's too much bust risk with him in a seasonal format. And again, I know I'm playing into the crutch, use him in best ball. But I think what you did, Mike, in best ball with the junior Chiefs was actually really smart. I even think, I'm curious what Davis thinks about this, I think there's something to be said in best ball perhaps taking some of the running backs here. You know, what if Edwards-Helaire gets hurt or one of them?
You took Darrell Williams. I was going to take him. He was like my pocket pick in the 20th round. I'm like, nobody's going to take Darrell Williams.
I mean, literally as I'm talking to you guys right now, two of my dynasty leagues have waiver deadlines tonight. And I just put in a huge bid. It's a super deep dynasty league, 30-man rosters. I just put in a massive bid for Darrell Williams. So, yeah. I agree.
I mean, he's 225 pounds. You could easily see them saying, you know, he's the goal line back and we like him on third downs because he knows how to pass block.
Jondre Washington can catch the ball, and at least he has some familiarity with Mahomes. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah. I mean, I think DeAndre Washington is now DeAndre Washington is now like a premium zero RB target. So I think he's in that Boston Scott, Chase Edmonds,
yes.
Tony Pollard, Darrington Evans group of guys where they are going to go from the 10th to the 13th round, and you know, one or two things breaks their way and they are RB1s for that time period.
And in this format, you could have a game where Edwards-Helaire just needs a breather. They throw a pass to Washington. It turns into a 40-yard touchdown, and you've already made a score for that week without having to call it ahead of time.
Now, yes. Davis, in that Stopa league where we were, you know, whatever, 99% to win, the key to our success that year was
Thompson?
Was David Johnson.
Oh yeah, well that guy too.
Okay, but what I mean is, and that was your guy. We got him for $3, and we were shocked that we even had to say $3, but we did. And now, I am completely out on David Johnson and totally in on Duke Johnson. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just I think that the number of times you can go back in NFL history and be like, okay, well this guy is completely and totally cooked. And then you see him uncook himself.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have been watching the game longer than I have. Yep. Can you think of an example where a guy seemed
running
like
back?
He had absolutely
no.
Yeah, and then came back. Like, it just never happens.
I mean, it's like Randy Moss, maybe, if you want to
Moss
expand
it. Yep, that's
but
true.
You're hardly ever going to find maybe O.J. Anderson, right,
sure,
Scott?
I mean, that's before my time.
Would you say that O.J.
Anderson? There aren't a lot of them. I'm sure there's probably a couple of great ones I'm not thinking of, but I would certainly bet against it. The way I look at it is once the situation starts to go bad, you know, once the cheese goes bad, it doesn't go good again. You know,
right.
just throw the cheese out.
So then Duke Johnson go after, like, James White? Like, I'm sorry, I cannot get excited about James White.
Because they hate him. Because he was playing behind Carlos Hyde last year.
Yeah, Carlos Hyde.
I mean, if you really want evidence that they hate him, the biggest play of their season, right? The Deshaun Watson where he got sacked but somehow was not sacked. That 49-yard pass that he completes for the touchdown to beat the Bills, he did not complete that pass to Duke Johnson. He completed that pass to Tywan Jones, who is a converted cornerback from the Oakland Raiders, is where he played before he was on the Houston Texans. Like, they hate him so much that in the biggest play of the season...
But then why did they trade for him?
I mean, you know, why do they do anything? I literally couldn't tell you.
But you would agree, though, that in a vacuum, Duke Johnson is actually a really good player. Like, I would be so psyched if my real-life team got Duke Johnson.
That's never been a dispute. I think everybody thinks that there's talent there, and it's like, well, Cleveland couldn't figure it out, and Bill O'Brien, he seems interested in him. No, actually, he's not.
He's actually a good runner, a very underrated runner.
You know what? I can't wait till Duke Johnson's on the Patriots next year. Then I'll have a good season. Then when James White like retires or takes a job in the organization and Duke Johnson becomes their James White.
So are you out on Duke Johnson or in on Duke Johnson, Davis?
I think he's in that same tier of premium zero RB targets, but I don't like slam dunk him when I take it.
So you would take like Pollard over Johnson? See, I think Johnson has the standalone.
Yes, I would take. Well, okay. Again, it depends on the type of team I'm building. If I'm building a team that you know might need 9 PPR points week one, I would take.
Yeah.
Duke,
okay. That's an excellent point. And most of the teams that I construct and the teams that we constructed when we own teams together always needed those 9 PPR points from their second running back.
I want to make a point too that. I know there's people talk about upside and upside, upside. And, you know, there's some people are even trying to promote it as like the new tenant of 2020. Upside's great. Upside's important. We want people who could be, as much as this is an overused term, a league winner. But there's also always going to be a place for a Jarvis Landry or, you know, I don't want Julian Edelman anymore, but there was a time when I did want Julian Edelman. You got to have a few guys who give you that drumbeat and give you consistent scoring while you expect your studs to win the game for you. I'm not saying you don't want a whole team of those guys. You can't have a whole team of James White and Kirk Cousins and stuff like that.
Landry's not totally boring, though, now. He's getting the ball deeper downfield. He's getting more involved in the end zone. What do you think?
Okay. I'm not going to argue about which player.
No, I see what you're saying, though. It's a great
point. The point is this. I think the idea...
Keenan Allen is boring.
The idea that you can never take these guys who maybe are more floor-driven than upside-driven, I think that's misguided. You can have some floor guys. It's just you have to have a lot of people on your roster who you think have explosive upside, but sometimes you can take a floor pick, and it's perfectly reasonable.
Do you have any interest at all in Jarvis Landry, or are you just out on all of those, like, mostly PPR wide receiver type?
I just very rarely need a wide receiver there, right? Because so many of my drafts are starting, you know, I have four wide receivers right. by the seventh round or whatever. So I just, it's very rare that I take him, but I don't have like a strict opposition to him or anything. I think he's fine. You know, it's whatever.
Isn't Boyd kind of one of those players?
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah. So would you go Hunt in a conventional, say you're building a one running back at the top or you know, some quasi zero running back team, would you take Hunt over Landry, David?
Yeah, because Hunt has
which is what happened value. In our league.
Yeah, he has standalone value, and he has, you know, top five RB contingent value.
Are the Browns a better team, Davis, with Hunt as their running back or Chubb?
I did. Actually, I think you could argue it's Chubb because it convinces them to throw to Odell Beckham instead of the running back.
That's true. That's a very good point. Boy, that's an extra term
let's,
there.
Let's
I like
be
that.
Fair here. It's possible Hunt could be better than Chubb, but that doesn't mean Chubb isn't a good player.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Yes.
But if yeah, I was true. Defending, if my team is playing the Chiefs and I find out Chubb is hurt and Hunt starting, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
I just think it makes them tougher to defend.
Hey, look, it's nice to have two running. I wish the Patriots had one. I wish they had drafted Nick Chubb instead of Michelle, although I guess Michelle had better stats in college. And, you know, Belichick's close to the Georgia staff. I'm sure they steered him to Michelle, but I sure wish they had Chubb.
So, Davis, before we go, why don't you, in looking at things or based on the drafts that you've been in, not necessarily even this league, what are the guys that are, you know, those middle round gems? Is there one guy at every position that you're really happy when you land them in that sort of like eighth to, you know, 14th round?
Yeah, it's Ronald Jones, it's Cam Akers, at tight end it's Noah Fant and TJ Hawkinson, the guys I took in our league. I really like getting Boston Scott, and I really like getting Laviska Shenault, who someone in this draft took him way before I thought that I was going to have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and this was probably just me underrating the room. You know, I thought because he was buried way down here in the ADP on the Best Ball 10's website, I thought I would be able to get him later. But yeah, Shenault, to me, I think, could end up being a guy we see as like one of the all-time rookie wide receiver values over the second half of the season.
With Fant and Hawkinson both being second-year tight ends, is that a sweet spot for you?
Plus
draft capital.
The double tap Fant, Hawkinson, and or you could I put Gesicki in that group as well.
What about
the
Herndon?
10, 11 turn. To me, I think that is just really if you don't get Kelsey, Kittle, Ertz, or Mark Andrews, I'm trying to go there.
What really helps Gesicki, because I know some people worry about Turner's history with tight ends, but they keep losing receivers.
Keep losing guys.
He's going to be a flex. He's going to basically be a receiver for them.
Yeah.
Why not Herndon, Davis? Is it just you're worried about his injury history? Because Darnold has turned like, you know, Ryan Griffin was very playable. Yeah.
I mean, maybe I just need to look at it a little bit closer. I'm having a hard time projecting the Jets passing game because of the additions of Mims and Perryman. And then theoretically Le'Veon Bell is going to get, you know, 12-15% of the targets as well.
Right.
I don't want any of Bell. You took Fant and Hawkinson before Hurst. Do you think the buzz has gotten out of control with Hurst?
I mean, just, okay. Do yourself a favor, everyone. If you are thinking about drafting Hayden Hurst, just go take a look at his combine stuff and just be like, what is going on? He is. So first of all, Hayden Hurst is 27 years old. He has not really produced in the NFL at all. And he just is a very base. He just looks like a basic, boring blocking tight end. Right. He does not profile in any way other than in draft capital as a guy who is going to, you know, be a crusher in the NFL. And I think that the emergence of Calvin Ridley, you know, that Hooper role was pretty solid, but Calvin Ridley had literally, I mean, zero target, one target games last year, even while he was healthy. I think that the Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones target share is so massive, and they are still going to throw to their running backs, that I'm not sure this role that people are projecting for Hurst is actually there.
But it's not necessarily that you think that he's a lesser talent than Hooper. You just think that there's going to be less
I'd make no
less pie
between the two of them.
Yeah, that's where I am on that. Which makes me sometimes like Hurst more than maybe I should because I'm not factoring in. But it seems like it's such a narrow tree that there still has to be a lot to go around.
Ryan always wanted Hooper to happen. They would hang out off season and throw tons of passes together, and Ryan would talk them up, and then it would be back. You know, talk can be really cheap, but it would be backed up by what happened on the field. Maybe I'm overplaying this card. I would be more open to Hurst if he had reps that they're not going to have. Although I think they may have been doing some practicing together before everything went together. But the bottom line is, there's enough Hurst buzz out there that I feel like you have to buy him at a ceiling, and I don't think the ceiling is exciting enough to go for him. One pick I made that I want to promote, I think I picked him probably earlier than he normally would go, but I just wanted to get him. And I know the specialized formats for this player because he, in a lot of standard leagues, he might not even get drafted. I think Gardner Minshew is good, or at least fantasy good.
He was drafted
as a non-starter. He was drafted as a project last year, and he had 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, rushing value on a team that was a shit show. And their defense has been totally dismantled. It shows how short windows are in the NFL, you know, because they had a great defense a few years ago. They should have beaten the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, and they couldn't handle the big moment. But they're going to stink. Minshew's going to play that don't-give-a-fuck approach. Chark can drag him. You know, Minshew can even play poorly, and maybe Chark can make a couple special plays and bail the game out. I think he's a chance to be, like, in a super flex league. If he was my second quarterback, I'd be really happy.
Davis, this is trivia that Scott probably knows, but getting back to Hurst, if Treadwell is their third wide receiver, guess how many first round picks are going to be starting in the Falcons offense.
So we got Gurley, we got Julio, we got Ridley. Ryan, we got Treadwell, and I'll just assume one of the linemen, so 5.
11.
No way.
Yes. Yeah, I wrote an article about it for 538.
Ridley was a first-round pick.
Yeah. Every player on their team is a first-round pick. Every projected starter except for Treadwell.
That's pretty cool, right?
Well, My favorite Hurst trivia question is the one that everybody knows, which is that he was drafted before Lamar Jackson.
And before Mark Andrews.
Right, and before Mark Andrews, who, I mean, I know it was easy to get lost in the shuffle because he played on a loaded offense, but you look, it's not like he didn't have college tape, although talk about scheming guys wide open, you know, Oklahoma's.
They thought he was like another Jason Mara, I bet.
I guess.
You want to watch football porn, you know, watch Baker and watch Murray, and then the quarterback they had last year had monster season too. They just, you know, that's why you watch Lamb, like, as great as he is, and sometimes Lamb catches the ball like 45 yards from the end zone, and you're like, he really scores on this play? But there's also a lot of walk-ins. There's also a where's the defender on the play?
Yeah, and that's interesting for Ruggs. Where are you on Ruggs before we go, Davis? He seems like kind of a Davis guy, but on the other hand,
otherworldly athleticism, but he didn't break out young.
Yeah.
You know, he never really actually broke out, but every time you watch the guy play, you're like, he just crushes. He's always open. No one can catch him. So I can see him kind of being Tyreek Hill-esque in the sense of, you know, not great college production or anything, but like he's so good and so fast that teams give him 140 touches a year just because he just is always getting there.
And Antonio Gibson seems like a Davis Matic guy. Am I right about
through
that?
Through and through. I was pounding him in drafts before. Obviously, he's much more expensive now, but I'm still taking him where he goes now.
I got clarity from Fanball. He will never be able to be played as a running back in any Fanball, Best Ball, any one of these formats. He's not to gain that eligibility.
He will next year, though.
Yeah, fine, but, you know, it's kind of stinks.
I want to see something on Ruggs. I dare any of you, whether it's you two guys or any of the listeners, to close your eyes and imagine a deep, successful pass from Derek Carr. I can close my eyes and imagine a Mahomes long touchdown. I can close my eyes and imagine.
What about Daryl LaMonica? I can imagine that.
I can imagine Jay Cutler with that throw in Arizona, right, where he ran across the grain and then he just uncorked this beautiful long throw. I can think of the Aaron Rodgers Hail Marys and all that stuff. I cannot.
Darnold would be good for Ruggs, actually.
Derek Carr throwing a long pass that was successful. I'm sure it happened. I just don't remember it. And
Darnold throws away the ball on fourth down with the game on the line. Throws it out of bounds.
I know this is also too convenient, but there's a time where
Carr.
John Gruden was a great coach. I just don't think that time is today.
Yeah, I meant to say that Carr throws the ball away.
He throws the ball well backhanded, though. We saw that clip.
Yeah, behind his back. That's the Sonny Jurgensen play.
Right. So, yeah, the Ernie DiGregorio, right? That like 75-foot pass.
We're just mentioning names. Davis has no idea who we're talking about.
I know who Daryl LaMonica is.
The Mad Bomber. That's what the Raiders could use. They would be so much more fun.
They went to Super Bowl too, right?
Yeah. Yep. Okay, well, Davis, I have to say, this was a lot of fun for me. I always love talking to you and just getting a lot of times when I'm out on these like pandemic walks, I'll just call Davis up or Evan Silva just to get their thoughts on things. And I always appreciate that, Davis. But having you on for this whole podcast was just such a treat. So thank you very much.
Hey, anytime, fellas. And I am glad to donate the $10 because I also auto-drafted and only got one defense.
I did notice that. I gave you a 31-minute heads up. But by the way,
I must have been out with my dogs or something. But so yeah, or maybe the Browns defense goes nuclear and I end up getting there anyway.
I do like the Chiefs defense,
by the way. We almost
never
talk about this, but are you a two defense guy, a three defense guy, or do you want two tight ends here? Just give me a really quick. And I know it depends on what you
format,
get.
This format, I think the optimal was two quarterback, two tight end, two defense, six running back, and eight wide receiver. I think is the optimal.
Yeah, especially with is this because of COVID?
Well,
the eight wide receivers.
The COVID thing is crazy. But in terms of like best ball roster should be like 30 guys deep or whatever. But
right.
Yeah. I think that's just the correct build anyway.
COVID's gonna wreck every position. And by the way, when you want to talk about roster construction, a lot of people have done a lot of great work on this. But make sure you check out Mike Beers, who's done a lot of the work of what different roster constructions have worked in previous years. I know, some of that may be sticky and some of it may not be, but he does a lot of good work on that subject. And you should always, you're going to have to audible in the middle of a draft, but you should always go in and think, have a rough idea of how you're going, what your roster construction is going to be.
Okay, so once again, thanks a lot, Davis. And why don't you remind everybody where they could hear you do your own podcasts?
Yeah, everyone, follow me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. You can listen to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast and also the TakeCast. If you just search my name on iTunes, both of them will pop up.
All right. This was great. Thanks a lot, guys.
This was a lot of fun. And then to everybody who's waiting for positional previews, they are coming very soon.
Yeah, we're going to start that tonight. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.